Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 27th, 2001. In the Creekside Room, this morning is Bob Ekblad and company. Today's session number is EKBO 2001-06, and it's titled Identifying the Forces That Hinder Your Call, the Principalities and Powers. Let's listen in.
This week, I'm really happy to be surrounded by friends and co-workers from the Skagit Valley. We have Bonifacio and his family who are here.
Yeah.
We meet all of them. This is Gerardo and
Lise.
And then we have Rob Mercatante and Rocio, who are on the staff of the People's Seminary and Tierra Nueva. And other folks will be here tomorrow. But our overall theme is resisting the principalities and powers, combating the passions. And the idea is to, how do we find liberation from forces that hold us back from our call? And the way I'm defining the principalities and powers is sort of the external forces that we're up against, which today we're going to talk about that. And the passions, I'm using a word that is a positive word for many of us. Passionate about something is a great thing. I'm using the word passion the way the early church fathers, the Greek fathers, use it as sort of the desires of the flesh, so to speak. The passions were considered to be sicknesses. In Russian Orthodoxy, Eastern Christianity, sin was seen primarily as sickness. Okay, and there are eight sicknesses. You've heard of the seven deadly sins? That's a Western appropriation of this, of eight mortal passions, which was earlier.
Which one got left on?
I'll tell you later. It's actually what got left out really quick is vainglory and pride are seen as distinct in the Eastern Church, but for the Western Church, vainglory and pride were seen as the one and the same thing. So. But the reason that it's eight deadly passions is because one spirit goes out. You know, when a spirit goes out, it gets seven more. But it works in itself, it comes back, and so the state of the person is worse. So that's seven plus one is eight, right? So, I mean, there's all kinds of sort of biblical exegesis behind all that. But anyway, there are many forces that people find themselves combating, or maybe not even combating, just being beaten down by. And these forces, you know, often the liberal church tends to focus on the, you know, on the external powers, you know, like things like, you know, the state or the IMF, the WTO, or the courts, which are very valid oppressive forces that people are up against. But often the liberal churches tend to ignore the passions, or, you know, the flesh, whatever, the desires of the flesh, which, you know, equally are at war against people and in people, and people find themselves entrapped by addictions and things like lust and greed and anger. And so when someone is someone who may be completely liberated from some of the structural forces, although none of us are, but other forces could be at war in them and keeping them, holding them back. So, by the way, we're doing this translation, so that's why you're hearing some talking on the side here.
You were really fantastically equipped. You know, I got the little microphone thing, and he had his headsets on, but I'm afraid it's just going to be whispering in his ear.
So anyway, the scriptures give us a perspective, kind of outline many different forces that would be called principalities and powers, on the one hand, and also outline many of what the early church fathers would call the passions. So today, what I want to do is give you just a brief crash course in the principalities and powers according to the scriptures, and then we'll look, most of our time is going to be spent looking at how these forces are manifested in the lives of our co-workers here, and what we observe there, forces that we observe that we're up against. Now, the most famous texts in the scriptures that talk about the powers are probably the oldest one is in the New Testament, is 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And I'll just, today we're not going to talk about how to combat the powers, but just get them out there, expose them in a way. There's a book that I want to recommend. It's called Unmasking the Powers, the Invisible Forces That Determine Human Existence by Walter Wink. It's a pretty good treatment of And actually, he's got another volume, which is an earlier volume that goes through and shows all of the, kind of gives a biblical, it's like a Bible study book that goes through all the different Greek words for the powers.
Okay, this is where you get the information about different kinds of passion from medieval times?
No, this doesn't really deal with the passions. This deals with just the principalities and powers. Well, anyway, I was going to say that the liberal church tends to focus, and mainstream churches tend to focus more on the powers, right? And the fundamentalist churches and pietists tend to focus more on the passions, you know, like everything is about lust, greed, jealousy, things like that. But these days, hardly anyone's really talking about the passions, except, you know, maybe some more conservative churches. But it's mainly, it's kind of something that's ignored in a way. So I feel like both powers and the passions need to be unmasked and exposed, which is what we're going to try to do in these five sessions. So in terms of the principalities and powers, the most famous text, I think anyway, is 1 Corinthians chapter 15. I'm just going to read these through, and I'll write on the board so you know where I'm getting them. Okay. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 24. Then comes the end, when he hands over the kingdom to God the Father, after he has destroyed every ruler, every authority, and power. Okay, in a way, this talks right already about how God deals with these forces, right? But here's three different categories: ruler, authority, and power. And then it says, for he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. And the last enemy to be destroyed is death. So you can see death, I mean, that's talking about force. It's not talking about a human, you know, kind of flesh and blood person or even an institution, right? It's talking about that's what a power or force is. Now, so this is one text. Another is Ephesians chapter 1, which is quite similar. And a little bit later, you know, Paul is the earliest writer in the New Testament. And you have the powers and principalities present in the Gospels also, but it's usually in the form of the Pharisees, the scribes, those offices, those religious offices, and, you know, and everything that they represent, scribes, Pharisees, on the one hand, and then people like Herod and Pilate, you know, the governing authorities on the other hand. Okay, so Ephesians chapter 1. God put this power to work in Christ, this is verse 20, when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, and above every name that is named. So this gives a little bit more specifics. One of the ways you can know how old a text is in the Bible is, you know, which are the earlier ones, is they're briefer. And they often give you less information, right? And then as someone's thinking about, like Paul, you know, people aren't sure Paul wrote Ephesians, but many are. And anyway, then there's an additional information that comes in later text. So here we have ruler, the rule, authority, power, and dominion. And then in addition, and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the age to come. So what are some of the things we have listed here so far? From Ephesians, actually from 1 Corinthians, you have authorities. It's too bad we don't have Bibles. So one of our objectives is to get out of here.
Okay.
So first Corinthians chapter 1. Okay, so we have ruler and every authority and every power, and then we have specifically death mentioned. Okay. So then we have Ephesians 1, 20 and following. This is 1 Corinthians 15. Okay.
Lowy.
God put this work, put this power as a distinct power, right? To work in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule, okay, rule of and authority, once again, the authority of the same word, and dominion, here's another word. And above every name that is named. Every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the age to come. And he has put all things under his feet and has made him the head over all things for the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. Even all things in a way. Now there's another one in Ephesians also, which is verse 13. And this is one that's a little more subtle. Ephesians 2:13. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace. In his flesh he has made both groups into one and has broken down the dividing wall. Yeah, the dividing wall is a force right there. And this dividing wall could be, the modern equivalent of that could be like discrimination. You know, something that distinguishes one group from another, or social class positions, right? That is the hostility. See, there's another word. He's broken down the dividing wall, that is the hostility. Or the hatred. And then it says, verse 15, he has abolished the law and its commandments. Okay? So even these are considered to be, could be considered to be powers. You know, they can become powers if they're, depending on how they're wielded. This part is Ephesians 2, 15. 14 to 15. Okay. That he might create himself one new humanity in place of the two, thus making peace, and might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross, and putting to death that hostility through it. Okay, so then once again the word hostility. You know, in the Gospels, I mentioned some other authorities. I'll put them up here, like you have scribes. The office, and this is more the office of scribe, okay? Scribe, Pharisee, and then you have people like Herod, the Tetrarch, you know, Pilate, the Romans. One example of the Romans is in you have the ones, you know, the text that says, Hosanna in the highest, you know, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. If you read that Hosanna in the highest, In Hebrew, if you read it, what it sounds like is, in the highest, reads mu romim, which in Hebrew is from the Romans. So Hosanna means liberate us, or save us. So when the crowd say, Hosanna in the highest, the way it's written in Greek is most likely code language, because everyone who knows Hebrew knows that it's liberate us, and then mu romim, because mu romim is Romim would be the plural of Rome, Romans, the Romans, and the mean in Hebrew. So the M Romim is from. So the crowd was most likely saying, liberate us from the Romans, liberate us from the Romans, okay, to Jesus. So, I mean, and there's the presence of this, the Romans, as a force throughout the Gospels. In terms of the way we deal with these forces, is, as I mentioned, we're not going to be dealing with that today. We're just going to be looking at modern equivalents, okay? Now, I'd like to get to some, as quickly as we can, the modern equivalents. So, one thing that I want to point out here, too, is, well, there's one more, actually, Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians verse 12. For our struggle is not against enemies of blood and flesh, but against the rulers, against the authorities, and against the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Okay? So, here we have even more detail. Not against enemies in flesh and blood, but against the rulers, okay? Against the authorities, once again, and against the cosmic powers, okay? So I'll put cosmic powers. Against the cosmic powers of this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil. In the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God. Okay. Now we're getting into a biblical sort of response to the powers. Now, and there's one more in Colossians, which is kind of a repetition of a lot of this. And then in Revelation, there's just tons and tons of material about this. You know, you got Babylon, just mentioned, right? The great Babylon, the whore. You know, and we could spend, you know, a whole week just looking at the powers in the scriptures. Now, one thing that I want to add here, the Greek Bible was the Bible of the New Testament, you know, about Christians. Most of them were citing. If you look at citations in the New Testament of the Old Testament, it's almost always in the Septuagint version. So one way to find out how these terms were used in the Old Testament would be to use as concordance of the Greek Bible. And if you do that, you'll find that authorities and powers and all these, many of these words appear throughout the Old Testament. And almost always they are enemies of Israel. You know, when Israel's called, you know, to have their vocation as, you know, as a priesthood or whatever, as the people that have their bearers of good news to the nations. It's governing authority. It's some of the surrounding armies, and you know, you have the Hittites and the Canaanites, and you know, often they are called powers, but they're called authorities. You know, and all the struggles in the Old Testament, they're very concrete. You know, like the Babylonians coming and sweeping in and wiping out the Israelites and carrying them off into captivity, Nebuchadnezzar. Or, you know, you think of Esther and all that happened to Esther and her people, you know, with the first Holocaust that's described in the Hebrew Bible. And then Pharaoh, for instance. I mean, all of the spiritual, the authorities and powers and rulers are always concrete and incarnate in political forces. Okay? So that's important to remember as we read this, because I think we modern Americans, we tend to spiritualize these forces. But there is a spiritual nature to them, and that's what Wink is really pretty good at looking at. He shows how there's a distinction in the Bible between the actual institutions and their spiritual force, but how the two are sort of often wed together. Okay, but in terms of the human beings that are part of an institution, they are distinguished in the New Testament from the actual institution. You know, so there's a call. Jesus calls us to love our enemies of flesh and blood, but Jesus is described as the enemy of spiritual forces. You know, that are distinguished from the institution, from the individuals in an institution. So, and a lot of this has to do with the name. You know, the name, every name that is named. You know, so you have you know, this mention of everything will be under the feet of Jesus, and you know, every name that is named in, on the earth. Those names would be, you know, just the names that we know of institutions, and you know, USA, IMF. I mean, there's room for that kind of, you know, that kind of movement between the scriptures and contemporary realities. Anyway, with that introduction, I'd like to just invite Rob to talk a little bit about manifestations of these powers in Guatemala, where Rob worked for 11 years.
Well, I warned Bob, I said, next time I'm going to be talking about Guatemala, I could go on for hours and hours, if not days and days. And so it would only be to 10 minutes, just no easy task. So just, you know, buzz me if I start going over. So, first of all, I'll start off by saying that I'm not a Guatemalan expert. I know very little about Latin America. In fact, to tell you how very little I knew about Latin America when I first signed up with Habitat for Humanity. they assigned me to a language school in Antigua, Guatemala, and I looked on the map to find Antigua, and plus with this great public education here in the States, and found the island of Antigua. So I was really psyched because I thought I'd be studying Spanish in an island. That's how bad it was. So yeah, I had very little idea about Guatemala. What I learned, I kind of learned along the way, and that's kind of how I hope to share it with you now. I went to Habitat as kind of a stepping stone between college and seminary. This was going to be kind of my 3 years, get my hands dirty, get out in the real world, find out a little bit about life before going back and hitting 4 more years of books and tests and classes. So I went down, and we were assigned to go to Antigua. It was a beautiful colonial Spanish town with cobblestone streets in this really peaceful valley. And that's where I first saw the tanks rolling through town. And I saw the indigenous villages around Antigua being bombed day and night by the army. And that's where I became slowly aware of the war that was going on. I left in 1989.
You left in
1989? I left Ford Guatemala in 1989. So I was there from 89 till 2000. And it was slowly through seeing these tanks and seeing forced recruitment of indigenous kids in the street that I became aware of probably the greatest power structure in Guatemala, which is, of course, the Guatemalan army. And it was through my teachers in Antigua that I began to learn about the war, and I became aware of yet another great structure in Guatemala, which was the United States. And for those of you who don't know, and I didn't know certainly when I went down there, the reason why there's a war at all in Guatemala is that because we had two democratically elected presidents in Guatemala back-to-back who were doing wonderful things for the country. Finally touching on all those themes that were so necessary, land reform and all those of that. Well, the second of which touched on some really sensitive land issues because land was owned by the United States, and they wanted to reappropriate that, actually buy it from the United States, but then distribute it amongst the campesinos. Well, the U.S. would have none of that, and basically there was a coup that was sponsored by the CIA, and they overthrew the president, and that started a series of military dictatorships that didn't end until the late 80s. This isn't even secret news. The CIA even brags about this as being one of their most successful missions because it was fairly bloodless and quick. Then all this was news to me. After Antigua, after my language school, I went out to the countryside to my project, and I worked in this very rural area, which was called El Rosario. No running water, no electricity, lots of scorpions, and this is where I was going to be for 3 years building homes. And I saw that definitely the need for homes was tremendous there. Folks were living in just one room shacks, basically, where the fire, the cooking fire was inside also, so it was just smoke-filled. The ceiling was black and full of insects, and you had up to 10, maybe 12 people living in this one small house. So it was very obvious that, yeah, there was a need for housing, and I was glad to be part of that. But during my time in Habitat, I also realized that, you know, we'd get someone who'd go sick, and we'd take them over to the clinic, and yes, there was a health clinic in town, just there was no one there to staff it. Or the few times that there was actually a nurse or doctor visiting, they might prescribe medicine, but the only medicine that was actually there in the clinic were either expired medicines or medicines for diseases that didn't even exist in Guatemala. The schools were crumbling and overcrowded. The kids had no access to books, certainly, and the teachers even had to go out and buy their own chalk. So that education also isn't a high priority for the government. And I began to realize through all of this, another thing I should mention is that the houses that we built for Habitat, the folks had to pay them, had to pay the cost of the house, but they were very inexpensive houses. And they had to pay them over 20 years and with no interest. So you're talking about $5 a month a house payments. And even so, there were families who couldn't make their payments because if someone in the family got sick, the little money they had would have to go for medicine or a doctor's visit. And so they couldn't make their payments that month. Basically, these folks were earning about $1.50 a day working in the fields. And so I began to become aware of a much larger problem, of which the housing was just a symptom. So when I left Habitat after my 3 years, I decided to stay in Guatemala, postpone seminary for a little while yet, and work with a Christian popular education group. And basically what they did was they took these themes, translated them into kind of popular materials, and then we'd go out to these radical nuns and priests and pastors and catechists who worked throughout the country with small groups. And we provide them with materials to help them teach folks about human rights, about indigenous rights, women's rights, the peace process, how to organize yourself. And it was there that I became aware of yet another structure in Guatemala, a powerful structure, which is the church. And I became aware that it can be a very powerful and progressive force, but at the same time, depending on which branch of the church you're talking about, it can be a serious roadblock. One of the most frustrating parts of the work was having our materials reviewed before we could bring them out to the countryside, and very often they'd say, no, this can't go, this can't go. So I realized that the church, while a very powerful structure, very rarely wielded that power for any kind of good.
We do Catholic churches or
Catholic and evangelical churches. In fact, this group was kind of an unusual ecumenical space that hardly existed in Guatemala because of the conflict between Catholics and evangelicals. There's a huge wall there. This is one of the few spaces where Catholics and evangelicals, progressive-minded, work together to do this kind of education. While I was working with Urnas, I was approached by the Guatemalan guerrillas and asked to work with them in the same kind of area that I've been working with this church, with this Christian organization. But there was a benefit to working with the guerrillas in that they basically told it like it was. There was no censorship of our materials, and we were the ones who got to meet with the folks directly, and that was entirely appealing to me. And I became aware then of another structure within Guatemala, which was the guerrilla movement. Now, I hesitate to mention this a lot of times because I remember what I thought about guerrillas before going down to Guatemala. And basically, you know, it's what you hear about the pig and drug runners and kidnappers and terrorists and all those great words they use here. The Guatemalan guerrillas were basically anyone who didn't believe in the status quo as it existed in Guatemala. And so what it involved, the URMG, the Guatemalan guerrillas, embarked everyone who was in any kind of disagreement with the way things were. So you had teachers, labor unions, students, you had indigenous groups, peasant farmers, an enormous group. And they were basically the folks who thought that we weren't happy with the way things were, we wanted to change things for the better. And so it was very easy for me then to agree to work with them. These were probably the major structural groups in Guatemala. Probably the one other one that's worth mentioning because it's so involved in all these others is the economic power in Guatemala. Mainly agricultural families. In Guatemala, 2% of the entire population owned 80% of the land. And this helps explain a whole lot. These were the power behind the scenes here. These were the folks who wielded just enormous authority. Because these folks owned so much land, they needed a population that was illiterate, that wasn't organized, and that was willing to work for $1.50 a day. And so a good number of Guatemala's ills, the status quo, if you will, was maintained by this group. And this group was basically the power behind the scenes behind the army and also then the government itself. So in a nutshell, these were the structures that worked within Guatemala. If afterwards you have any questions about how they all interacted or what the outcome was of all of this, I'd be more than happy to talk about that. But without wanting to go over my time limit, that's Guatemala in a nutshell.
Okay, so we're going to look at some equivalents really quick. What might be some of the modern equivalents? And actually, we're not being all that precise here about like what is an authority versus a power versus a ruler. But let's just get a list out here of some of the things that Rob mentioned.
Government.
What's that?
Government.
Government. Okay.
A landowner.
Government. Landowners.
Church.
Church.
Guerrillas.
Military.
Okay.
CIA.
USA?
Well, I must say that 2 years ago, President Clinton came to came to Guatemala for a summit of the Americas, and he apologized to Guatemala, stopping short of just saying we backed the wrong horse, but did apologize for being a major player in the worst years of Guatemalan violence.
Okay. Well, anyway, that's. What I want to do is just look at, I'm hoping that we'll see the breadth of sort of contemporary equivalents to these powers through listening to the stories of Rocio and Bonifacio. And then we want to leave some time at the end for some questions and discussions. Go ahead.
Yo soy Rocio Robles, soy mexicana.
I'm Rocio Robles, I'm a Mexican. Right now I'm working with the pastor's Ekblad.
La situación. ¿Por qué nos venimos? Ustedes saben que en Estados Unidos los inmigrantes mexicanos somos muy abundantes.
Why do we come? You all probably know that we Mexican immigrants were abundant here in the United States.
¿Por qué nos venimos?
Why do we come?
Generalmente la gente que llega aquí es gente...
Generally, the people who come here are humble people, people from the countryside.
Nosotros trabajamos con mucha gente de Oaxaca.
We work with many Oaxacan Indian people.
Son gente que son muy, muy pobres.
They're very, very poor people.
Aunque también hay gente que hemos encontrado que son maestros, que son profesionistas.
Although we've also met people who are professional people, who are teachers and
abogados. La situación en México, pues, es bien sabida, ¿verdad?
So, the situation in Mexico is well known.
El gobierno mexicano es corrupto.
The Mexican government has been corrupt. A lot of problems with corruption.
No hay muchas oportunidades a causa de esto.
There are not many opportunities for the people because of that.
Cuando nosotros llegamos aquí, ¿qué pasa cuando nosotros llegamos?
What happens when we come here?
La mayor parte de la gente viene a trabajar.
Most of the people come here to work.
Ustedes sabrán también de que hay gente que viene a otros negocios como droga y eso.
And you probably know that there's other people that come here with other objectives like selling drugs and stuff.
Yo les aseguro que hay más gente en los campos de trabajadores agrícolas que en la cárcel.
But I want to assure you that there are far more people out in the migrant labor camps than there are in the jails.
Muchas veces uno tiende a ver más lo negativo que, o sea, de esas personas, ¿verdad? Y a generalizar.
Many times we tend to focus more on the negative people and generalize.
Y yo lo que, a mí lo que me gustaría que supieran es cómo la gente la gente inmigrante, los trabajadores agrícolas, la gente que viene a trabajar.
How did the immigrant people, how did the people who are farm workers, how did they confront the obstacles?
Mucha gente, lo primero que aquí llega a buscar un trabajo.
The first thing that people do is they, when they come here, look for work.
Se enfrenta antes que nada dónde va a llegar.
First problem they have is where they're going to go.
Siempre llegamos con familiares.
Always we go to where there are other families.
El trabajo.
And where
¿cómo trabajamos y llegamos? Pagamos miles de dólares, tenemos una deuda por pasar ilegalmente.
We pay thousands of dollars, we often have debt to our family members of thousands of dollars to be able to cross the border illegally in the United States.
Es difícil conseguir una visa para venir a trabajar.
It's very difficult to get a visa to come and to work in the fields or in
factories.
To find work as a minimum wage worker, you can't get a visa to come.
Así que tenemos que arriesgarnos a pasarla antes que nada la frontera.
So we have to take the risk and we have to pay a smuggler to get us across the border.
Ya desde ese momento nosotros tenemos una deuda.
And from that moment we have a debt, and that's thousands of dollars of debt.
Conseguir trabajo. Para conseguir trabajo nosotros tenemos que conseguir papeles.
To get work we have to get papers first.
Tenemos que pagar por esos papeles.
We have to pay for these papers, which are illegal papers.
Luego tener que enfrentarnos a los patrones.
And then we have to deal with the lawyers.
Muchos de ellos nos pagan en efectivo.
Many of them pay us in cash so they don't, they can avoid paying taxes.
Muchos de ellos sí pagan lo que es la ley.
Many pay they are due
legally,
and they do have to declare
pero
what they're paying us.
Una vez que nosotros hemos ahorrado dinero, buscamos un departamento.
The first thing we do after we've saved money is we look for an apartment.
Últimamente las rentas en el Valle Escalle han subido una barbaridad.
Recently the rent for apartments in Skagit County have risen dramatically.
Hay una persona que casi es dueño de medio Mount Vernon.
There's one person who is the owner practically half of all Mount Vernon and all the apartments.
Él cobra generalmente por una casa de dos recámaras, por un departamento de dos recámaras.
He charges generally for an apartment with two rooms. $675.
Eso paga este señor, que trabaja en el campo y eso tiene que pagar.
And farm workers are paying, have to pay that much.
Hay mucho latino, y más en esta época.
There are many, many Latinos now, and especially in this period.
Casatenientes ponen mucha dificultad para conseguir una casa.
The tenants or the owners of the apartments and the houses, they make it very difficult for people to get into their apartments.
Últimamente ha sido más difícil conseguir trabajo.
Lately it's been much harder to find work.
Si la gente generalmente tiene trabajo en los campos porque ahorita hay cosechas.
Generally, people are able to get a place to stay in the migrant camps, and they're able to get work in the fields because now there's a harvest.
Una vez que se acaba la cosecha,
as soon as the harvest is over,
tiende a buscar, por ejemplo, en las pescaderías,
people look for work in the fish processing plants,
en pollerías,
or in chicken processing plants,
o donde se pueda, pero
wherever they're able to find work.
Ahorita inmigración
tiene
tan controlado a esos patrones.
They have these owners, these employers so controlled.
Tienen que exigen.
They demand that
un seguro
that
bueno,
people have good valid social security numbers and valid green cards.
Entonces, todas esas puertas se cierran para uno.
So all the doors are closing for
es cada día más difícil para nosotros.
Each day it's getting harder and harder for us to find
un trabajo de que sea de salario mínimo.
To find a job that's a minimum wage job.
Y es que el IMS está presionando mucho.
The IMS is pressuring very much the employers.
Ahora, con la policía muchas veces si uno va en el freeway, un caso que el pastor supo de una mujer que la paró un policía de camino.
People have difficulty with police too, because especially when people get on the freeways, One of the state patrols recently stopped a woman.
Y llamó, y como no hablaba inglés, llamó
and because it didn't speak in English, they called an interpreter.
De la migra.
And the interpreter was a border patrol agent. Mm-hmm.
Así que si esa persona era ilegal, seguramente.
And so if that person is illegal, then for sure they're going to be taken and deported.
Uno no puede, imagínense, es difícil. Uno tiene que manejar a veces sin
licencia.
Uno tiene que, uno gana dinero solo para sobrevivir, para
comprar comida.
Es difícil conseguir pagar, estar pagando una aseguranza de un carro.
To be paying for insurance for a car.
Por lo tanto, cualquier error, para la policía, a veces. Si uno no tiene licencia, si un hombre no tiene licencia, y lo han parado varias veces para
cárcel,
es seguro que esa persona que cae en la cárcel va para mí.
It's a guarantee that for anyone that ends up in the jail gets deported to Mexico.
Inmigración constantemente está
immigration is constantly
visitando
going
las cárceles, buscando gente.
Looking for illegal people.
Entonces, o sea, para la gente que yo estoy viendo en el Valle Escalde, sobrevivir aquí en Estados Unidos. Y, pero aún así, tratamos de hacer.
But in spite of all that, we struggle.
A veces uno piensa ya por los hijos.
Because we think about our children.
O sea, pues pueden aprender inglés aquí, aunque no vengan a la universidad.
Even though they can't go to the university.
Casi imposible,
it's almost
¿no?
impossible to go to the university.
Entonces, al menos aprender inglés.
Unless you don't learn English, but I want to add that you can't go to community colleges or universities without a valid social security number. So there are millions of people that are not eligible who are here illegally in the United States. They can't go past high school.
Mm-hmm. My experience with I taught for Wenatchee College for a period of time. And teaching English as a second language, and they did not require
not for ESL. They want to get a degree like an Associate of Arts degree or something like that.
Oh, then they have to have a valid social security number because they'll give them a college number without them.
If they're going to be regular students and get a degree, they have to show that they have a valid social security number.
Además que si ha estudiado, por ejemplo, aún así, si fuera ilegal y ha estudiado, y si no tiene seguro social y si llega a saber la inmigración que ha estado estudiando, que ha ido a la universidad, no tiene derecho a una visa.
The other thing is, if you've gone to the university and you managed to get there somehow illegally and get into the university, like you came with an advanced degree, you lose your rights to a green card with the INS for having gone to the university as an illegal person. One thing I want to add here too, while Rocio's talking, recently the Catholic Church in our county finished it. Just a wonderful housing project. All the money came from the government, and the government put a requirement that they had to, everyone over 18 has to show their social security number in order to get into the apartment. They haven't been able to find anyone to fill the apartment. They have like 40 units, I think, and maybe they have one or two of them filled, because probably 70% of the people in our county are undocumented. Okay, so, and they're the ones that have the greatest need for housing. So because the church got this money from the state, it just shut the door, you know. So when you think about George Bush and his plans to bring, you know, to have this churches receive state money, you know, churches really need to watch and see what kind of conditions there are on that money. So anyway, the guy who's in charge of that particular project with the Catholic Church is just totally frustrated, and he's trying to get us to work with him to fight some of those laws.
Just another example here. Bonifacio actually applied for one of those apartments and was rejected.
Yeah.
Hay un poco de diferencia entre el dinero del Estado y el dinero federal. Por ejemplo, una familia puede obtener con niños, podemos tener ayuda médica del Estado, pero no podemos tener estampillas si no tienen papeles.
Oh, yeah. You people are able to get state help for medical needs without papers, but they can't get food stamps. You know, so there's a difference between federal and state in terms of people's eligibility And it all has to do with how they're enforcing the laws here, which laws, which agencies are choosing to be not enforced to enforce. Anyway, what's the other thing?
Oh, pues esta es la situación en cuanto a los trabajadores latinos que hay, sobre todo mexicanos, los indígenas.
So this is the situation of many farm workers and many indigenous people.
A lo que tenemos que enfrentar, los problemas que para este problemas de inmigración, problemas de la policía
problems,
y todo, no tanto porque se quieran meter en problemas, sino porque no pueden conseguir un trabajo, porque no tienen las posibilidades, uno se enfrenta a todo eso.
Trying to survive, just trying to survive, people end up getting into all kinds of trouble, not because they are troublemakers, but because, you know, in order to find work and survive, they have to do things like work with counterfeit documents or drive without a license. And, you know, in order to get a license, the Department of Licenses have made it very difficult for people to get licenses. You know, they say you have to show your birth certificate. In some cases, you have to show that you're here legally in the United States in order to get a driver's license. So, you know, with all of our laws, we are forcing a lot of people to drive without license because our public transportation system is so inadequate. Anyway, Jose, maybe we can list some of these things that Rocio, you guys can help us add to some of the powers that Rocio highlighted. What comes to your mind?
INS.
Okay. Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Mm-hmm. Laws.
Laws.
State and federal.
Okay, federal and state.
Landlords?
What's that?
With the landlords.
Landlords.
Police?
Police.
Employers?
Employers. And then things like Social Security. You know, Social Security, people who have invalid numbers are not eligible to benefit from, you know, unearned income credits, or they're not able to ever collect the Social Security they're putting into the system. So millions and millions of dollars are going into the system on these false numbers that is probably doing some more work than Congress has been able to do to prop up the Social Security system. You know, it's incredible. If you think about all the people out there, millions of people that are working under false Social Security numbers, and all that money is going into the system.
One example would be one of the farms we visited, Sakuma Farms. He basically said that he doesn't know for sure, but he would estimate that 80% of the folks that were working there are working without papers.
And he has 400 workers, right? You know, for 5 months out of the year.
And but they all pay Social Security. He keeps Social Security books, so that's all the money that's going in the system.
All right, Boni. Rob, do you want to translate for Boni, or do you want me to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sí. Mi nombre es Bonifacio, soy de México.
My name is Bonifacio, I'm from Mexico.
Yo también soy uno de miles y tantos millones que vienen a este país.
And I'm one of the thousands of, or millions of immigrants who come to this country.
Cuando salí yo de mi país, dejé este mi pobreza, mis amigos, pensando si algún día volvía a encontrarlos.
When I left my country, I left many family members and friends, hoping that one day I'd be able to return to them.
En el transcurso de mi camino, cuando yo entré al país extranjero aquí en California.
When I came into this foreign country, into California.
El primer trabajo fue en construcción.
My first work was with construction.
Hubo una persona que me ayudó a conseguir ese trabajo por medio de la iglesia.
There was somebody in the churches who helped me find a job.
Trabajé muy, muy a gusto ahí.
I was very happy working there.
Pero hubo una persona que me engañó.
But there's somebody who deceived me.
traerme aquí al estado de Washington.
Encouraging me to come to Washington State.
Que yo iba a ganar mucho dinero.
Telling me that I was going to make lots of money per hour.
Siendo que yo allá ganaba, gracias a Dios, 8.50 la hora entrando.
Even though there in California, I was making $8.50 an hour, which was good.
Trabajé muy bien con la persona en la construcción.
I had a good job in my construction company.
Cuando la persona le dije, me voy para Washington a ganar dinero, se sorprendió mi mayordomo.
My boss was very surprised when I said I was going with this other person to Washington.
Y me vine para acá y que vine a ganar con la persona que me trajo vendía algo.
And I came and the person who took me up here was a drug dealer.
Pero no lo hice en vender droga.
And he wanted me to deal drugs with him.
Porque mi oficio de trabajo es el campo.
And I didn't decide to deal drugs because my vocation is I'm a farmer.
Y empecé trabajando con Sukuma.
And I began to work with Sukuma Brothers, just a big grower in our county.
Ganando 4.15 la hora.
Making $4.15 an hour.
Humillado por los mayordomos.
Humiliated by the bosses.
De ahí duré un año trabajando ahí.
I worked for 1 year there in Sukuma.
Hice lo que pude, junté un dinero para mi familia.
Did what I could and I saved as much money as I could.
Trabajaba de 7 hasta 10 de la noche.
I worked from 7 in the morning till 10 at night.
Y de ahí una persona me contrató para trabajar en su casa particular.
And then someone contracted me to work in their home, in their nursery.
Y primer año muy muy a gusto trabajando.
First year I was very happy working there.
Segundo igual.
Second year also.
El tercero, a los tres años y medio empezaron a cambiar empezó a diferenciar las personas conmigo.
The third year they started to treat me differently.
Tocante problemas migratorios.
As far as immigration issues.
Porque esa persona me trajo por engaños trabajando en su propiedad.
The person that had me with a contract working for them on their property with deceiving me, telling me that they were going to help get me papers.
Fui consciente a lo que me pagaba, yo no, nunca puse un precio. Dijo, fui consciente a lo que ella ganaba en mi palabra. Nunca rechacé el dinero que me pagaba.
I never made any demands about what they paid me. I just received whatever she was able to pay me.
De ahí, me abrí camino yo solo.
From there, I began to start my own business.
A buscar trabajo por sí mismo.
Looking for work on my own.
Porque siempre anduve buscando trabajos en compañías donde consigo trabajo y siempre me pedí el seguro.
¿Cómo? Seguro. Because I was always looking for work with companies around, but they always asked for my social security card.
Pero yo pensé, si desde 6 años me hice hombre trabajando y quedando por acá, yo mismo me doy camino para buscar trabajo.
Here I am, I've been here 6 years. Now it's time to just launch off on my own.
Y trabajando por mi cuenta, limpiando casas.
And working on my own, I clean houses.
Pintando casas.
Painting houses.
No con maquinaria, con máquinas, sino con brochas.
Not with machines, but just with paintbrushes.
Económico. Y entre personas que he trabajado con ellos en sus casas, hay personas que me he encontrado de distintas religiones.
And I found people from different religions who I've worked for.
Y me han ofrecido sus servicios. Me han dado confianza en sus casas.
And they trusted me with their
houses. Para entrar a sus
and they gave me work.
Algunos dicen, ¿qué podemos hacer para ayudarte a arreglar tus estatus migratorios?
Some ask me, they say, what can we do to help you become legal?
Y yo a veces me quedo con la mirada al suelo.
And sometimes I just look down at the ground.
Porque yo me decepcioné ya de, no creo ya en eso. Estoy decepcionado de.
I'm completely hopeless now about that question, being here legally.
y hay momentos que mejor quisiera volver a México.
And there are times when I prefer to just go back to Mexico.
Porque como yo fui huérfano a los 3 años.
Because I was an orphan since I was 3 years old.
Y ahora por lo que me ocurrió de mi accidente.
And now with what happened in my accident.
Yo pienso que mi madre quiere que esté con ella.
I think maybe my mother would like me to be closer.
Es todo lo que puedo decir.
That's everything that I can say.
Es todo.
¿Este accidente que pasó el jueves?
Sí.
O sea, a mí me dijo que es como si Dios lo hubiera dejado para venir acá. O sea, que lo hubiera dejado vivo porque el accidente fue muy aparatoso.
Yeah.
El carro se destruyó. Entonces, él vio así como una luz de que era una señal de venir acá.
Yeah.
Y que como sea, él iba a
venir. He was planning on coming here. But he realized that when this accident happened, he felt like it was just like a light, like a sign that he really needed to come here and not work for this week,
right?
God is very miraculous, and God wanted to make sure that I came to the place where the pastor had invited me.
He tenido dos accidentes con este.
I've had 2 accidents now with this.
Pero por mi padre Dios no me ha pasado nada a mí, sino que a las personas que van a un lado de mí.
Pero por quién?
Por Dios.
Sí, pero because of my father, in referring to God, nothing has ever happened to me.
Pero a veces yo siento por los que van conmigo.
But often I feel for those that go with me, because some of them are there.
Porque yo siempre al despertar digo de gracias Dios que un día más me deja ver el sol.
And I keep kind of waking up and as I keep giving thanks to God that I'm able to see the sun, the light of the day. Y Bonnie, ¿puede hablar un poquito de las experiencias de discriminación que ha vivido aquí?
Pues
si no, no sienta que aquí
no, que yo soy bien siento, bueno, aquí puedo. No, a ver, no lo sé.
Oh, si Rocío quiere hablar un poquito de esto. I was asking them if they felt like they wanted to share any of the experiences of discrimination that they've experienced here in the United States. And in preparing for this session, almost every issue, the issue that kept coming up over and over again was being discriminated against. But he says, I feel too sensitive to be able to talk about that right now. I don't know if Rocio wants to talk about that. Because when you think about this hostility, you know, in the dividing walls, you know, that's a big one for the people we serve.
Una de las cosas más tristes que nos enfrentamos y que nosotros pues no conocemos allá.
One of the saddest things that we confront that we don't know about in our own country
es la discriminación.
Is discrimination.
Desde que llegamos, desde que entramos,
from the time we arrive and the beginning of our time here,
vemos eso, donde sea.
We see it everywhere.
En las tiendas,
in stores,
en el banco,
in the bank,
en donde sea, vemos gente, generalmente, pues gente blanca.
Usually it's white people who looks upon us differently, treat us differently.
O sea, no somos iguales.
We're not seen as equals.
A mí me da mucha tristeza porque si nosotros vamos a una tienda o si nosotros vamos a un banco, pues llevamos, es porque llevamos dinero.
Because we have money with us.
Y pues tal vez estemos más prietitos, pero el dinero es igual.
Money is equal
in
color.
Entonces yo creo que una persona que tiene un negocio debe de ver eso.
So I think that someone that has a business should
invite
all these people, spend their money in their stores.
Que nosotros generalmente,
but generally,
mandamos dinero a México, pero
we send lots of money to Mexico.
Mucho dinero.
We spend a lot of money here too.
Si ustedes van a una tienda y ven a unos indígenas o mexicanos,
if you go to the store and you see indigenous people or Mexican people,
mucha comida que es cara para nosotros.
You're gonna,
como los chiles y todas esas cosas que vienen de México, que
nosotros buscamos. In the stores, it's expensive.
Son un poco tontos porque
Because instead of adapting to the food here,
comprar fruta más barata,
and buy fruit that's less expensive,
verdura,
or vegetables.
Tratamos de comer lo que comemos allá.
We buy food that we eat back in Mexico, even though it's more expensive. You know,
entonces yo creo que una persona que gasta se debería de tomar en cuenta esto.
So if we're spending, then people should pay attention to that.
Entonces, en cualquier parte de las iglesias,
whatever part, in churches too,
bien triste,
in churches.
El pastor que acaba de llegar nos cuenta que era difícil conseguir una iglesia. Él es luterano.
A pastor who just came here, who's Lutheran,
y era difícil conseguir
to find a
rentar una iglesia porque era latino.
Because it was Latinos that were wanting to use the church.
Es lo más triste.
This is the saddest thing.
Porque se supone que somos cristianos.
Because supposedly we're all Christians.
Entonces, pues también, todas las iglesias católicas, las misas en español.
The Catholic masses that
bueno,
exist.
Son en la misma iglesia, ¿verdad?
They're in the same church
de los americanos.
That Americans use.
Yo me acuerdo que sacerdote que estaba ahí que era americano apoyaba mucho a los latinos.
I remember a Catholic priest who was American who helped a lot of the Latin people.
Contaba que los americanos se enojaban a veces mucho porque
he told us that the American parishioners often were very angry.
La mayoría del dinero era americano.
Because most of the money that was brought into the offering was American.
Que nosotros éramos muchos, usábamos muchos.
And there were many of us, but we were not giving enough.
Y pues es tan duro, tan triste eso.
This is hard and it's sad.
Y yo tengo aquí casi 11 años.
I have 11 years here.
No puedo adaptar a eso.
And I can't adapt to this yet.
Y pues todos los días tenemos que vivir.
And every day we have to live this.
Lo vemos en las escuelas.
We see it in the schools.
En donde sea, donde sea.
¿Y Bonnie? ¿No quiere decir nada?
Luego está ahí como
una historia
donde nosotros vivimos, pues somos criminados por los, el equipo personal de los apartamentos en primer lugar, que
place where we live and the folks that run the apartments.
Una vez tuvimos que ir al hospital por falta de las atenciones trabajadores que quedaron ahí, que nos llevaban las carpetas y fuimos a parar al hospital por cuestión de roña, ¿qué dices?
Sarna.
Oh, yeah.
Y yo,
¿Cómo?
Okay.
Sarna.
Yeah, one time we had to go to the hospital because we were diagnosed with having scabies.
Y yo fui a la oficina y les dije, mis niños tienen eso.
And I went to the office and I said, my children have this.
Hay que limpiar esa alfombra.
I think you need to clean the carpets of our apartment.
Mm-hmm.
This was the apartment that had just gotten into coming.
Había una persona que estaba ahí en la oficina con su madre.
And there was a person who was the manager of the apartments.
Y nos ignoró.
And they just ignored us.
Y entonces yo les dije al manager, si ustedes son muy estrictos en que uno les pague su.
And he said, I said to the manager, I said, since you're so, you guys are all very strict when it comes to us paying our rent.
Bien, ser también estricto.
And you should also be strict about the way you keep your places clean.
Garbage, la basura.
That you should make sure you clean all the garbage, take all the garbage away.
Porque en el dump de la basura hay muchas moscas.
Because there were many flies all over in the garbage place where you put your garbage.
Los niños juegan ahí.
And the children play nearby.
No hay por el lado donde nosotros vivimos, no hay columpios, juegos para los niños.
There's no place for children to play in the apartment, near the apartments.
Ahora, pues, no puedes visitarte a alguien porque luego llega el grúa y se lleva el carro.
And no one, and we have another problem is that when anyone comes to visit us, then the tow truck is called immediately, and our visitors' cars are towed away.
Si te pones en resistencia y meramente maya,
if you resist them, the manager,
luego dicen, no puedes hacer nada porque el manager tiene que comprar a la policía.
Because the manager has,
no le hacen nada.
The police doesn't do anything but just responds to the manager, not to the people.
uno mejor se queda mirando.
So we just instead we just
a la persona que es más mayor que uno.
We just feel más humiliated and we just look up to the people who are above us.
Como cohibido.
We're just like caved in, or in our caves. We go into our caves.
Ven algo mal. Tres días busca. Tres días me traje al apartamento y búscale. No te das más de que tres días y no hayas en tres días el apartamento. No más 10 días. En veces 3 días. Si el manager ve a un niño, porque los niños deben de estar a las 9 de la noche dormidos. Uh-huh. Ya el que ve en la calle ya. Ya va otro día con el papel y le pone ahí, apartamento fulano, no me sé las órdenes, tiene que salir el 3 días.
Oh, yeah, you have children playing. Any children are playing past 9 o'clock at night, and they stay on the apartment, on the apartment, or the children's apartment, it says that this family has 3 days to vacate.
Hace 2 semanas se estaban perdiendo los apartamentos y las familias con sus niños entre 12 desde las 7 a 12 y media de la noche y los niños con gripe, que había gente que andaba quemando y el manager fue una persona que llevaba a sus niños y le dijo al manager, mis niños tienen frío, porque si tienen frío me trajo a su carro, pero ya son las 12 de la noche.
There was a big fire in one of the apartments and all the people they camped out and the kids were, it was really cold, it was like midnight, and
dijo,
the manager just told the people to sleep in their cars.
Dijo el hombre, pues no podemos rentar un apartamento, espera hasta que se acabe el
can't we go into one of the empty apartments until this is repaired, and the manager would laugh.
Había gente que estaba a raíz descalza, no dejaban de meter a los apartamentos, sacarlos zapatos para ponerlo.
And there were people that were barefoot because they had to run out of their apartments and they couldn't, and there was no help for anybody.
Y lo que más me conmovió que hay un segundo manager que es de alguna religión y ahí
what hurt me the most was that one of the managers was a very religious person.
Ahí es donde me conmovió que dije yo ¿en dónde está el amor para sus hermanos?
Said to myself, where is the love for the brothers?
Es lo que yo sentí más mal.
And that's where I felt the worst.
Pero yo miro ahí y no nomás yo sino que más personas que están afectadas ahí que por medio de ese manager no me está hablar del manager, pero veo ahí que muchas personas se quejan de ese manager. De una religión que se llama
especially because of religious group.
Hombre, varones apostólicos.
The apostolic.
Sí. Y eso es lo que a muchos nos conmueve eso, que porque es una persona de
and so it's especially hard for many of us because we know we say why is it this person is such a religious person but yet they're
de una buena experiencia por tener el estudio bíblico
they go to Bible studies there
y tener ese corazón
but then he has that kind of a heart for the people
que somos todos hijos de Dios
because we're all children. Well, this is probably our darkest session, right? Because, you know, to kind of lay out what people are up against. And you know, this whole summer's focus is on call and, you know, being called by your name. And, you know, but there are many obstacles to people being able to really live and follow their vocations. And, you know, we outlined a number of these and we could go in even more detail now, but tomorrow what we want to look at is you know, kind of move on from the basis of this first session. I look at how one way that God responds by empowering the people is through calling the weak and you know, both recruiting, calling, and empowering the weak, even though they live in a world that is dominated by the strong. So we're going to look at how call is one of God's remedies or one of God's responses to the powers and principalities. So anyway, I welcome all of you to come and continue this discussion, and people will be sharing their stories of how they see God's call in their life as one liberating response to the forces of darkness. Does anyone have any questions before we rush off to lunch? Sorry.
This gentleman over here spoke of being promised to get legal papers mm-hmm. from an employee, an employer. Mm-hmm. Is that possible?
There have been ways to do that in the past, and most recently, there's it's not really possible. And that person maybe knew that, maybe they didn't. You have to be able to prove that the person you're hiring has a specialization that where you can't find anyone who's a U.S. citizen who could do it, right? So that's why Boeing, Microsoft, some of these groups are able to bring in people easily, you know, because they maybe find someone from France or from, you know, Asia or somewhere, Japan, or someone who has some kind of a higher education level or has a specialty, maybe computers, who you know, they can help them with their software in Japanese or something. They can find paper. They can get papers immediately. But someone who has a job that another person can do here can't get.
And I thought Bush and Fox were such good friends, and that they are going to make the illegal immigrants legal. Is that right?
The main problem is with Congress and Senate right now, because you have a lot of people that say we don't want to reward the lawbreakers by making it possible for them to get legal status if they've been here. For right now, there's a 10-year bar to getting legalized if you've been here for more than 1 year. Illegally. Okay, so that completely disqualifies the majority of the people who are presently here. There's a 5-year bar if you've been here illegally less than 1 year. Okay, so that bar needs to be lifted. And that's what Bush and Fox were talking about. There's a lot of congressmen and senators that are just opposed to that. They just said that just makes a mockery of the laws of our country by rewarding people that have already been here illegally. So there's talk of having a program that recruits new workers from Mexico. And there's a need for the public to really get educated about this and put some pressure on Congress and Senate.
And right now, on Bush himself, it seems like he's also fighting internal pressures within his own party. Mm-hmm. And the very last declarations he gave, just a few days ago, or that he's kind of taking a step back, and he's declared there will be absolutely no blanket amnesty. And everyone said, well, you know, what's this all about now? And it's probably just responding to internal pressures within his own party.
Well, it was a shock that he even came out with the idea of an amnesty in the first place. Although it's been Republicans who've been, you know, it was under Reagan that we had the first amnesty. The Democrats have been the worst in terms of immigration that I can see. You know, Clinton, under Clinton, INS, you know, was given far more authority. You know, some of the very worst laws against immigrants happened under Clinton's time.
Well, why? That just seems so crazy.
I think Democrats often want to prove that they're really tough. You know, because they have this dove mentality, or their princess of being kind of, I don't know. I don't really see that much of a difference.
But is there kind of an old relationship between Democrats and American labor who see
a lot of the labor movement has been really supportive. They've come around and become very supportive of undocumented
lately. Yeah.
Okay.
What would happen to the U.S. economy if you're without migrant workers?
Well, the multinationals are already quick to kind of many of them have already moved, you know, to Mexico or to different Asian countries and places where they can get the cheapest labor sources. So that's already the trend. You know, so the writing is on, the future is limited for workers, both undocumented and documented, and, you know, I mean, U.S. citizen workers in America. In the light of the forces of globalization, it's increasingly difficult for all workers in this country.
What solution do you see? I mean, what would be a reasonable solution to all this? I mean, if you were in power, Bob, what are some of the things that could happen?
I think consumers have to be willing to pay more. You know, and if we're just going to go and buy the least expensive, what's cheapest? You know, we're just and also people who have money invested, if we're just going for the highest returns on our dollar, you know, it's investors, it's consumers that are fueling the whole thing, really. If we would try to buy locally and you know, if we knew where our food and where these days there's such an alienation between the worker and the consumers and the workers, I mean, the people that are producing their goods and, you know, farmers and farm workers. You know, the more we can. And last week there were all these sessions that Mike did on globalization that were excellent. You know, and so I don't want to just repeat that, but
Maybe just one thing alone is the very same line, so, and this is something that I was surprised to find out, that Sukuma, this large grower near us, in fact, I guess the biggest grower in the valley, they've switched over now to completely mechanized raspberry harvest, except for the organic raspberries, which, because they need to be presentable and have this, you know, they need to be perfectly hand-picked, that's the only area that's still picked by hands from the farms. So if there was more demand for that kind of quality merchandise, there'd be more demand for the migrant labor. It'd be a safer market than that. So.
Yeah. Buying locally, buying organic. I mean, you know, in Europe right now, I've lived in France for a number of years and have a return on a regular basis and know lots of French farmers in South France. And they're in that country. I mean, they're dealing with the same competition with Africa that we deal with the competition from Asia and Latin America. And what's really keeping a lot of farmers alive is the organic market, the specialty market.
But what about the immigration laws?
Well, there's a need for changes in those laws, I think. I mean, we have a huge number of minimum wage jobs, you know, that we need workers for in this country. And there's very few white folks, U.S. citizen folks, that want to do those jobs. You know, so there's a need for workers. I see.
So is it fair for a country like Switzerland that only allows people in for 7 years max and out you go? I mean, is that fair, or at least they let the people in for a while?
I don't think Switzerland is a model.
what's the answer?
I have just a larger question.
That's a good question. Oh. And some of these questions are very complicated. Yes. But I mean, we need workers, and these people need work. And I don't see why we're making it so impossible.
So the whole free market model doesn't make sense if you let capital move completely freely, but you restrict labor. Like it ruins the model that the free market advocates say, oh, well, this will lead to, you know, fair, like, equalized wealth and create wealth for everyone, but they're rigging the system against labor by restricting its movement. So
there's a lot of big employers that are nervous about like an amnesty, because they say that most people, if they had papers, would not want to do the farm work. Mm-hmm. So you need people that are vulnerable. And it's really true. Theo was pointing out how for a lot of the larger growers, they're often demanding that people have papers until they have a busy period, and then there's no requirements. People have to present a good Social Security card, a good green card when they work in during the slacker times. But then as soon as the harvest comes, they need workers. They'll take anybody. So it's this kind of a... And 70% of the workers, 78% of the workers in Sukumas and a lot of these other big farmers in our area are undocumented. And it's true that folks are... It's a very hard life to be a harvester, you know, by hand. I mean, strawberry harvest, blueberry harvest. And the pay is low, and, you know, maybe there's just some kind of a conscious, I don't know if it's a plan, but I don't know who is behind all this, you know, but this gets to the whole question of the powers, right? The principalities. What are we really up against?
I'm just going to say one other quick thing. One of the most ironic articles that I've read recently are about how the small farmers in Mexico just can't compete anymore. The large farms here in the States, because they are agro-industrial farms, are flooding the Mexican market with cheaper produce, putting out of business the small Mexican farmers, who then come to the United States as illegal immigrants to work for the large agro-industrial farms.
If anyone wants to have lunch, probably.